Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We are live right here on Sports Grid with hour number two of the early line. Kevin Walsh and Donnie Wrightside, the NCAA tournament rolls on. Four teams remain, which also leads to some intriguing options when we talk about the odds to win the most outstanding player. Obviously, Donnie, a lot of this is going to be very tied to who you believe is going to win this entire thing, which I'll just say right off the top. I think it makes it so tricky because these lines are pretty tight, and they all feel like they have a legitimate chance to cut down the nets. Maybe not. Maybe you've kind of said, listen, I think we're down to one team, two teams, whatever it might be, but we know that that will factor in a ton in terms of who then eventually can cut down the nets.
You're right, and that's what we're trying to get, you know, we're trying to get bonus coverage here is what it is. Like, if you think that Duke is going to win, it's a good chance that Paolo Banchero takes it down as the MOP. Also Colin Gillespie if you think Villanova wins. So I like this premise because we talked about even last week when there was more teams involved, Sweet 16s, Elite 8s, and you said, like, okay, if one of these teams wins it, it's probably going to be the superstar. Banchero is 3-1 right now. I believe last week, Kevin, he was closer to like that 21-22-1, where if you thought Duke was going to win it, that would have been the way to get after it. Now, also, the guys that are listed right here on this graphic that you're seeing, Banchero, Agbaji, Gillespie, Martin, Roach, and Manic, there's a guy even a little bit further down the list, because when you're looking at guys, Kevin, it's not only for me, the team that obviously is going to win it, it's going to have the MOP, but at the same time, you still want to have a superstar player, but also on top of that, a guy that can fill up the stat sheet and say, wow, that was an amazing performance, because Banchero can do that. 22 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists, something like that. But there's a guy listed here, North Carolina, Armando Bacot. 20-1 is he's listed now. So it wasn't even making that graphic list as that 15-1 or less. You're talking, the reason I bring him up, because Matic here, 15-1, rightfully so. He gets hot from 3-point range, dumps in 30 points. They win a national championship. He's probably going to get it. But you saw the previous game here for Bacot. What do you have? 20 points, 20 rebounds. Do one of those in the Final Four and one of those on Monday night in the championship game. You'll cash those tickets. So I know it's easy to say, well, you got to pick the winner here, but I'm giving UNC a lot of credit here. I think there's a legitimate chance that they can beat Duke and win a national championship. And I'm looking for the guy to do it, because I don't see Bacot having a so-and-so game and then moving past Duke and then also winning a national championship. I think he has to go off like he did. And if he does, double-doubles in the Final Four, double-doubles in the championship game, legitimate chance he could take down that 20-1 price.
I'm glad you brought up Bacot, because it allows to kind of hit a bigger topic here about kind of where these races all stand. To me, we talk about who's kind of been the star for UNC. You'd probably say Brady Manic or Caleb Love. I mean, Bacot's been consistent. It's double-doubles every game, and then he abused St. Peter's in a way that Zach Edey probably couldn't understand, 7'4" for nothing. But it feels to me, Donnie, other than Banchero, who I think if Duke wins, he wins. He is not the story, that's K, but relative to the rest of his teammates, he's the guy. AJ Griffin will hit some big shots. Jeremy Roach has been fantastic. We understand that Martin Williams is a big part of what they do. But if Duke wins, I'd be very surprised if ultimately this did not go to Bancaro. But everybody else, Donnie, this feels like whatever you do over the next two games is going to win you this award. That's how I'm reading this right now. As our radio audience is with us here on a Tuesday morning, Kevin Walsh and Donnie Wright said, taking a look at the most outstanding player odds on the FanDuel Sportsbook on the early line, Bancaro feels like he's put people at distance. Like, Donnie, you could sell me on all of Nova. Like, I know Colin Gillespie's the guy in kind of, you know, back-to-back Big East players of the year. I understand all of that. But, Donnie, Colin Gillespie's not been out here giving this team 20-plus with, you know, double-digit assists. That's not what Gillespie's tournament has been.
No, it hasn't. And it's interesting that you bring up this topic because how you're trying to grade these players yourself, because we sometimes say, is this going to be an all-tournament-long thing, which technically it's supposed to be. The MOP is not supposed to be, hey, you played well in the final but didn't show up in the rest of the tournament, yeah, so you're the most outstanding player. And also, do you take some of that bias out that we're saying if you have one of these teams, like Gillespie, as we talked about here, Remy Martin or Agbaji here for Kansas, saying they're the best player on the best team that won it, obviously, and you just give them award because, quite frankly, if you have, let's just say, Bancaro in the final go 15-9, but then you have Wendell Moore Jr. goes, hey, I went 21-15, and I was the reason. My block shot at the end of the game won it. My free throw at the end of the game won that. Do you just give it to him because it's the spot moment, or do you say, you know what, the totality of the tournament? Because different voters are going to have different preferences on what they actually see fit. Put more, hey, this guy really performed in the Final Four, or they wouldn't even have made it to the Final Four unless this kid played well in the round of 32 in the Sweet 16 games. It's fun to see it try to play out here, but I'm looking for those deep shots, and I have my eyes on Carolina right now with a lot of big payouts.
Yeah, look, Baycott 20-1. Jermaine Samuels has been Nova's best player in the tournament at 20-1. Gillespie should not be plus 750. And then we didn't mention Kansas yet. Look, Agbaji's been their star 5-1, but Remy Martin's been very good in this tournament here, who's plus 850. I just have my doubts that Remy Martin's going to win this off the bench.
No.
I have considerable doubts that that's actually going to be how this plays out. We'll get back to the NBA. Are the Los Angeles Lakers going to miss the play-in? Talk about that.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
How did we get here? The odds to make the play-in tournament in the Western Conference. The Minnesota Timberwolves are minus 390. Well, that's because they have a chance to maybe avoid the play-in and just be in the regular playoffs. Above them, the New Orleans Pelicans at minus 2100. Then you'll find the San Antonio Spurs at minus 165, and the Lakers are at minus 125. The Clippers own one of those spots. The Lakers are now they're minus 125, which is a little ridiculous, all things considered. But basically, the Lakers are the odd man out, according, Donnie, to the odds. Does it seem, as they go tonight to Dallas, catching a number in 12 that suggests LeBron will not be playing, does it really seem like the Lakers are going to miss the postseason to you?
It's starting to look that way. It really is. And I joked on this show for at least 2 months going, it doesn't matter what the Lakers do. Nobody's going to jump them. And finally, a team in that bottom pool, being the San Antonio Spurs, is actually showing a pulse and a heartbeat and stringing victories together. Like what, 4 or 5 or 5 of the last 6 games that they picked up W's, putting some pressure on the Lakers. And it's the worst case scenario for the Lakers because right now, usually you'd say to yourself, okay, well, AD's coming back. We were going to save him for the playoffs, but he's healthy now. Let's use him over the last 5 to 6 games. And with him and LeBron, we'll go 3-3. We'll ice this thing out and we'll get to the playoffs. Doesn't seem like that's going to be the case. Why? We don't know when Anthony Davis is coming back. And now LeBron James is injured. So if you're looking at that spread tonight, which tells me LeBron James probably isn't playing in this game, and now are you the Lakers picking your spots going, we're only going to play LeBron James in games literally that we think we can win? Man, this is a turn of events here, because you wanted the Los Angeles Lakers just to get to the play-in and say, I have Anthony Davis healthy and I have LeBron James healthy. You might not get either one of these guys healthy or even have a chance to even play in the play-in. As you see on the FanDuel Sportsbook there, a minus 125 to make the play-in tournament. This was one of the better locks of the NBA season over the past month and a half for the Lakers, just settling in to a play-in scenario. And that looks like it's going to be some tough sledding here, because you're getting a team that says, you know what? The Lakers are in trouble. Why don't we not tank and play decent basketball in the Spurs and try to make a run of this thing with Coach Pop? Nothing he would like more than to knock the Lakers out of the play-in with LeBron James.
Yeah, I am sure that that is true. So the Lakers have played one more game than this, or one less game than the Spurs, and they're a half game up. Well, they're a 12-point dog tonight. So to make this easier, let's assume they lose. They will then, you know, Donnie, have the same amount of games left, right? And they'll have the same record. They'll both be set there, 31 and 44. If you look at the Spurs schedule, they're home versus Memphis. They double up home games versus Portland. Good grief. At Denver, at Minnesota, home versus the Warriors, and at the Mavericks. Here is the big thing for the Spurs. They have two games that they don't even need to show up to and they'll win. They played Portland a week ago and beat them 133-96. I mean, to have two wins like that on the schedule in this kind of a race is so important. Here is the big thing for the Lakers, though, Donnie. It's not just LeBron who is questionable tonight. It's also Anthony Davis. I don't think either one of them played tonight. I'm not sure either one of them actually even plays at Utah. Yes, I know that means then they were going to lose two games in a row. They might lose them even if those guys did play. But then they are home versus New Orleans. My anticipation is LeBron and AD play, Donnie, and they play the rest of the way. And if that is correct, I still think the Lakers will land in the play-in.
And they have a tough run, too, because we were taking a look here also. When you look at the back end of that schedule, which trying to fight into the playoffs for the Spurs, is they have a back-to-back to end the season. It's two very good teams. But are those two very good teams even going to be playing their starters at that point here? So if you're taking a look at two wins versus Portland, maybe you steal two wins at the end of the season. That's four. And that's a heck of a lot of wins here to stack up for the Spurs when you compare it to the Lakers, who basically win two out of every eight games. Because when you look at the Lakers coming down the stretch, they're going to lose to Dallas tonight. They're going to lose to Utah on the road, and then they're going to put all their eggs in that basket versus New Orleans, as they should. But then you still have to play Denver, at Phoenix, at Golden State. And keep in mind that Golden State game, the same way I'm talking about, you know, lining up for the weekend, it's a little bit later for the Spurs. Like, if you played the Golden State Warriors, you probably would want them on the last game of the season. You should be able to beat Oklahoma City. So there are some wins on the schedule. But I do think the Spurs' schedule is laid out a lot better than the Lakers, because you do see two easy victories on there. And then you're getting two good basketball teams, which, again, the Dallas Mavericks probably already locked into their seeding in the last game of the year. Why is Luka Doncic going out there playing 35 minutes? He's not. And that might be a way into it there at that point.
And I think one of the tough spots for the Lakers is that Phoenix game, because maybe Phoenix doesn't play anybody. They're traveling the next day. They have a game actually versus the Clippers in Los Angeles, I think. The Phoenix Suns will make sure to send a point to the Lakers in that game. That's where the Lakers have not done themselves a favor by AD saying we would have beat them if I stayed healthy. He's right, by the way. People need to grow up. He's obviously correct about that. Obviously. But that it's not going to help them. The Suns will play every... The Suns, by the way, don't need to play any more regular season basketball. They've not only clinched the one spot in the West, but in terms of the NBA, they're not in line for any awards other than Monty Williams winning Coach of the Year, which is also probably locked up, although who knows? Maybe they'll give it to Jenkins, and then people are going to start saying that they refuse to give it to Monty, which maybe there's some credence to, maybe there is not. But that's where things sit with the Lakers right now. I'll ask you this, DRS, as we'll close this out here, and then we'll make a transition over to the NFL in our next segment. The Lakers catching 12 tonight. That is a 100% LeBron is out line to you? Or if LeBron is in, what does this number look like?
Yeah, first of all, we'll take a look at the anticipated starting lineups, which does not include LeBron James. So this is the mighty Lakers fighting for their play-in lives here, going with Westbrook, Reeves, Gabriel, Johnson, not Magic Johnson, that's Stanley Johnson, and Dwight Howard. With all those marbles. So that 12 and a half tells me that LeBron James isn't playing. And quite frankly, if LeBron James was playing and healthy, and if that line was 12 and a half, it's time for LeBron James to call up Rich Paul at Clutch and say, it's time to start putting our houses on the market because this isn't working anymore for me. I'm not going to be starting out here and being a 12 and a half point dog against the Mavericks on the road. So it tells me, and also, if you're looking from an organizational structure, so many times, Kevin, I try to equate this to the NFL, where you're playing late in the season and saying, we're not going to win this game, and we're going to raise the white flag. I think the Lakers organization knows, like, hey, guys, go out there, have some fun. If we win, unbelievable. But if not, our only goal is to get AD and LeBron James healthy back in a couple days here, so we might be able to make the play-in. How hard are these times now for the Lakers? Like, you're praying to get in the play-in. Remember all the superstars? Oh, this play-in is so dumb. I don't think it ever should happen. The Lakers are actually lucky that there's a play-in this year because everybody would have been on the bench for weeks now knowing they can't make it into the playoffs.
It's very funny. I wonder if Durant will give it its final seal. I mean, it's not going anywhere anyway. But just so people know, last year, the play-in gave you LeBron and Steph, and like in big games and everything like that. But moreover, like this year, it has a chance to save the Lakers, save the Brooklyn Nets. The play, I hope you love the play-in. That thing is here forever. Although, also, like, is it, can I blame the play-in? Because, like, that's why the Lakers are bad. Like, they would have figured it out if they didn't think they could just sleepwalk into the pressed ninth spot. Yeah, exactly. Let me spin zone this a little bit. Jimmy Garoppolo is going to get cut. Tough scene. Maybe not.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back right here on SportsGrid. NFL headlines include Jimmy Garoppolo. Now, you might think that Donnie and I are tired of saying, I told you so. No, not even a little bit. So here's the scenario. And Schefter just sent out another great update. If I were him, I'd stop reporting on Jimmy G, but that's besides the point. Kyle Shanahan has now said, Donnie, there's a scenario in which Garoppolo remains a Niner. John Lynch said yesterday, and the reason that this was built into the show as Donnie pieced everything together, is because Kyle Shanahan said, John Lynch, listen, when you make the move that we made to get Trey Lance, certainly Jimmy was not intended to remain on this team, but he's too good of a player to cut. Let me very petty, Donnie, get this part out of the way. Is it fair to say that Jimmy's injury negatively impacted his value?
Yes, it is. Now, I want to read this tweet by Adam Schefter just to let the people know where he's coming from and where I'm coming from here. One day after the 49ers GM, John Lynch, said the team had no plans to release Jimmy Garoppolo, Kyle Shanahan said there's a scenario which Garoppolo remains in San Francisco for the upcoming season. Kevin, that scenario is otherwise known as the disaster scenario, because that means nobody wanted your quarterback. Everybody said he can't play football anymore. You thought he could play football. You were the smartest man in the room and made a trade up to get Trey Lance and said he's going to be the future of your program, and he can't beat out Jimmy Garoppolo, which, again, nobody wants to trade for because they don't think he can win on their football team. I love the 49ers organization. I do. I think John Lynch is a very good GM. I think Kyle Shanahan's a bright coach in the NFL, and they've done some very good things on the football field, which probably sooner than later are going to cost them a Lombardi trophy. But the way they've handled this situation is hilarious to me. It's called overplaying your hand. Everybody knew, including Jimmy Garoppolo, that he was not going to be the starting quarterback here in 2022. And they're trying to tell you, wait a minute, all along, I told you there's a scenario, and I told you Jimmy Garoppolo, and we would be fine if he's our starting quarterback this year, which begs the question, why did you give up multiple drafts to get Trey Lance? You could have just sat on your hands, started Jimmy Garoppolo, picked up two more first-rounders that could have helped your team win now, because apparently Jimmy Garoppolo is one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, according to you. But you know how we know that's true and not true from your organization? You went out and drafted Trey Lance because you thought Jimmy Garoppolo wasn't your future. And now you're going to tell us, quite possibly, he just might be our future. Not a good look for the 49ers. Not a good look at all.
Can I just... I'm never going to get over the tweet that said Jimmy G's trade value won't be impacted. Can I read you, Donnie, a quote from the Lynch presser? There's a quote verbatim.
I like quotes. I like them. Yep.
I think ultimately the teams we were closest with, the surgery gave them pause and they ended up going in other directions. Literally, people are sleeping in this house. Literally, Jimmy Garoppolo is still on this roster because of the shoulder injury. That's why he's there. It's compounded by being not very good, and the Niners having zero leverage. Because here's the thing. Let's pretend the Trey Lance thing never happened. It didn't. It's a big part of it. But pretend it didn't. You can't pass up on cutting or removing Garoppolo and saving $25 million. That's why Jimmy's leaving. You're going to take a $27 million cap hit on Jimmy Garoppolo when it can be a two and you move on from him? That's why Lynch is trying to say, oh, he's too good to be cut, because he knows that's the last resort. And to be honest with you, Donnie, put your pride and certainly Jimmy's aside and hold on to your own seventh rounder you're going to have to attach to Garoppolo and just cut him already.
It should have read the room. It should have read the room after the season ended here and reading the room for your young quarterback and Trey Lance. You know Jimmy Garoppolo wants to be traded. You pick up the phones day one of not even free agency, day one when the season ends. You take the temperature in the room, report back to your owner. Hey, by the way, nobody wants Jimmy Garoppolo. Good, cut him today. Because you know what that's going to signal? Trey Lance is so ready. We shopped him for one day, couldn't find a buyer. Good luck, Jimmy Garoppolo. Loved what you did for us here. Go find another job. We got Trey Lance. He's going to be an absolute superstar. But instead, you're keeping him around. What's the scenario that he plays? What's the scenario that you're talking about where Jimmy Garoppolo shows up to camp after not throwing a football for 7 months and then within a week's time frame is able to beat out your young hotshot quarterback already? How's that going to look for Trey Lance in the future? Does Trey Lance ask for a trade out? You admit it was an absolute mistake with a Super Bowl caliber team to trade away multiple drafts to get a young rookie quarterback that doesn't look like he can play. And we're being unfairly harsh on Trey Lance. He hasn't had a chance to shine yet, but we can only go off of what we're seeing from the 49ers, who said, this is our guy. We gave away so much capital, Kevin, that we love him so much he's going to be a superstar. And 2 years into it, you're going, I think Jim Garoppolo might be a better move here, even though he can't win us anything at this point. The looks are bad from San Francisco.
And that's the great point. Is I don't think we'd be as hard on Trey Lance if it wasn't so easy to read the reluctance that is coming off of this Niners team to move on from Jimmy with absolutely nothing coming back, I guess. It just feels like they're all uncertain about what they want to do. And I think it's more, they seemingly are stunned at how badly the Garoppolo surgery thing has burned them. But again, like, Donnie, when did they get eliminated? Like, mid-January? Right? Like, how this news came out, like, what did they want to happen? What did they think was going to happen? Like, they should have taken just like the first offer that came across their plate. Like, they tried to play hardball. It didn't work. You can't even be like, ah, yeah, they got burned because, you know, Baker randomly hit the mark. Like, it was Matt Ryan who got moved. Carolina, by the way, still needs a quarterback and, like, won't call them on Garoppolo, who assuredly could be had for nothing. For nothing. The net of getting rid of Jimmy G is $25 million in cap space. It's unbelievable to me. With a couple of minutes left here, a story that cracks me up a touch is the double Detroit news. They get Hard Knocks and the 2024 NFL draft. The draft thing bothers Donnie more than it does me. I just think, listen, I know people are excited about Dan Campbell. One, people were not that excited about Hard Knocks last year, and it was the Cowboys. I don't know if Dan Campbell's going to come in and save the situation. But also, Donnie, like, Jared Goff's third year on Hard Knocks, yeah, you just got to avoid that if you can.
Yeah, if I'm the – look, you know me. I like to talk NBA commissioner. I'm going to put my commissioner's hat in the NFL on right now. You know what my press conference had been yesterday? I heard word that Detroit is going to be on Hard Knocks. Yeah, we're not going to do that to our fan base in the NFL. They don't want to see that boring football team. And number two, I heard there was thoughts here that Green Bay was supposed to get. I'm going to keep it in Green Bay because I don't want the draft going to Detroit. And third off, finally, I'm going to make this proclamation today as the commissioner of the NFL. My NFL fan base out there, you will never see Detroit on Thanksgiving Day again because every year they are embarrassing to our franchises around the NFL. That's the report you should have saw from the NFL this week coming out saying, Detroit, ha, maybe up for sale at this point to move that franchise. That's what I think of the Detroit Lions here, getting the draft, getting Hard Knocks, and still being on the NFL. What's the tradition? Everybody thumps Detroit on their way out the door to their own Thanksgiving dinner? Man, it's not enough time in the day here for me to talk Detroit right now. It's not about the people of Detroit. It's just the way this organization has been run. I don't know, Kevin, for 70 years?
Here's my thing on the Hard Knocks. First of all, there's only three teams eligible. The Panthers, the Lions, and the Jets. The Lions are very easily third on that list. Carolina is going to either have a Darnold-Cam Newton competition, which would be amazing, or they're going to draft a quarterback in the top 10. And you have the Jets with year two, Zach Wilson, layups. But also, like, do we really need to have the Hard Knocks people with their hands behind their back that no team that's made the playoffs is eligible for Hard Knocks, Donnie? And we only had three teams to pick from. Come on.
Yeah, come on. Let me put the commissioner cap on again. Hey, who won the Super Bowl? The Rams? Yeah, you're on Hard Knocks. No, you're on Hard Knocks. Like, what are we doing here? You can only have one or two teams. If you change your head coach, you're scared to death that the cameras are coming into the room. I'm the commissioner every year. Chiefs, you're on Hard Knocks this year. Rams, Tampa Bay, Tom Brady's coming back. Yeah. You're on Hard Knocks this year. What is it with this? What's the NFL doing?
And it's not even like if you just made the playoffs last year. It's like the last 2 years.
I mean, come on.
Three teams to pick from? But to be fair, they picked the worst one. You had an opportunity to maybe get yourself Cam Newton mentoring Malik Willis? And I have to watch Jared Goff for the third time?
Give me Cleveland. Good Deshaun luck. Watson. Yeah, give me Russ in Denver. Come on, NFL.
No, not eligible, Donnie. Not eligible. We'll be right back on here.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
back right here on the early line. Kevin Walsh and Donnie Wrightside. We are getting closer and closer to the NFL draft. I believe we're actually less than a month away, the back end of April. And to help us break this down is Jamie Eisner, coming over from the Draft Network there, does a great job not only hosting the TDN Fantasy Podcast, but covering the draft with that betting perspective. Jamie, thanks for joining the show.
Happy to be here. This is one of the most exciting times of year in general, and the most exciting year time of year for us. And you kind of see if I got on, just draft good players. That's our motto here. And that should be the motto for 32 NFL teams across the league. But we know teams get a little too cute along the way.
I do not think that is every team's motto. I really don't. I'm sure at some point Donnie will broach that topic. But Jamie, main reasons I had reached out to you was this move for the number one overall pick. Aiden Hutchinson had seemingly, you know, locked this thing up with the Jaguars, putting all their offseason free agent moves, emphasizing on the offensive line. It seemingly was going to be an edge, and it was going to be Aiden Hutchinson. And I guess Trayvon Walker's had some other plans. His odds have continued to climb, plus 350 for the top pick. They're co-favorites to be the number two overall pick. What have you made of this Trayvon Walker move?
It's been fascinating because it happened really rapidly about a week ago. Because for a long time, there basically, once the Jags franchise tagged Cam Robinson, we saw a shift where Aiden Hutchinson went from plus 300. He was behind Ekwonu, behind Neal, jumps to -3, -4. At one point, he was like -5, -600 to be the number one pick. And then there really wasn't much movement. There was some movement behind him, but nobody was challenging him. And then the Trayvon Walker buzz really started. And, you know, Daniel Jeremiah and Dane Brugler have been talking about Trayvon Walker for a while. But there was a shift last week where people saw his athletic scores and saw his numbers. And there started to be a little bit of buzz of maybe this is the edge the Jags go with the number one pick. And he went from a guy that was getting double digit to one odds to shooting up to where now, like, you can, depending on where you bet, anywhere from plus 250 to plus 350 right now to be the number one overall pick. As you said, the co-favorite to be the number two pick. And maybe more importantly, Aiden Hutchinson, now the favorite to be both the number one and number two overall pick. So there seems to be a lot of concern. And I don't get a sense there was a big bet on Trayvon Walker. This feels like a media personnel momentum shift in the odds as people are looking to bet on somebody that's not Aiden Hutchinson, because, like, at this point, there's no value in taking him if you haven't already got your bets in.
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff when you talk about it, because I always like to call it smokescreen season, where everybody's trying to put information out there. Do you want to trade in? Do you want to trade out? Do you want to move up? But one of the more fascinating things each and every year, Jamie, that we see is the quarterback market and how that evolves. Just a few weeks ago, you saw Kenny Pickett as the odds-on favorite to be the number one overall quarterback taken. Now we're seeing Malik Willis here at the FanDuel Sportsbook posting a minus 200 price. In your opinion, why do these moves get made where some of these guys are the favorites early on and not the favorite later? And also, who do you think deserves to be the number one overall quarterback between Malik Willis and Kenny Pickett?
See, this one I don't think is a smokescreen. We've got the chance to see Malik Willis up close, getting a chance to go see him at the Senior Bowl, see him in Indianapolis. And it's interesting because he's the guy that everybody looked at and said, he's got all the tools in the toolbox. He just isn't a put together product yet. And everybody was, we'd heard all throughout the process that while there's some warts in his game and some things he needs to clean up, he's the guy that's just like, if everything clicks, clearly has the highest ceiling, where Kenny Pickett's the guy that comes in with the high floor but lower ceiling. And we've gone through this process. It felt like NFL teams were looking for a reason to take Malik. And given the fact that he showed some progress with pro coaching with Dan Campbell's group at the Senior Bowl, had a pretty strong combine as well, it kind of came evident that, okay, Malik Willis is going to be the guy at number one, number one at the quarterback spot, because he has that game-changing ability. I still have some levels of concern. I hope he can go somewhere where he doesn't have to start right away, that he can sit for a year. And I know that is very rare these days. You don't get that afforded that opportunity very often. But I look at Pickett as a guy that can come in and you can add him to a team and he can get out of your roster what you give him. Like, let's pretend like the Broncos didn't trade for Russell Wilson for a second. Like, that would have been a spot that made sense. He can go in, he can get you a playoff caliber roster, can take him to the playoffs. I don't think he's going to be the reason why somebody elevates into a Super Bowl contender. Malik's the guy that maybe can get there, but it's going to need some work and need some time to get to that spot. So if he goes to a place like Carolina, I mean, you can't really be excited about anything Carolina's doing right now. And yeah, he's would probably win a competition with Sam Darnold, but that's damning with faint praise.
Here's my thing that I've not been able to get a good read on with these quarterbacks is the fit, the landing spot, as you mentioned there. They're on the FanDuel Sportsbook, Malik Willis's favorite landing spot is the Carolina Panthers at plus 250. Falcons, Steelers, and Seahawks all 4-1. Kenny Pickett is plus 200 to be a Panther. Well, they're certainly not going to draft them both, Jamie. It seems like the Panthers are the favorite just because we all know that they don't have an answer at quarterback right now. Is that where you expect Malik Willis to go off of the board at six?
I do, but like I say that hesitantly because it looks like I don't know what Carolina's doing. First off, they've struck out on everybody this offseason, either between they're not interested or these franchise quarterbacks told them, yeah, we don't want to go there. There's a very good chance this is Matt Rhule's last season as the head coach and that we could be seeing a lot of turnover there. The books are protecting themselves because could they take Kenny Pickett? Sure. I mean, there's a Kenny Pickett-Matt Rhule connection. There's obviously the Pitt-Tepper connection. Like, so I can see where they're drawing these strings and these lines here, but they also have a massive need at tackle, and they could have the second or third best tackle available to them at six. I could see somebody, if they get really fall in love with a guy like Malik Willis, trading up above them. The Jets and the Giants are sitting in front of them and would probably love to move back out of their spots, including the Jets, who have another pick at 10. They have to be the favorite because they're the first team that picks that has that clear need. But I don't think I'd be really confident betting on them right now, particularly when we're talking about like 2-1 or 3-1 odds. Like, I don't think that's enough to get me to feel really excited about taking them to take Malik Willis right now.
Jimmy, betting market's always evolving here, particularly with the quarterback position. As we know, it is a commodity in the NFL. We just talked about Malik Willis and Kenny Pickett, possibly that 1-2 combination. But there is a bet on the FanDuel Sportsbook now listed here, which is one of my favorites. Total number of quarterbacks drafted in round one at a nice price. Over 3.5 is paying out at a plus 162. Is there a chance, Jamie, in your opinion, that we can get four quarterbacks going in the first round? Or are you just saying, you know what, I think that's too much. I would lean towards the under in this spot.
There's always a chance at that position. I don't see it. I think it's probably more likely we get only two than we get four. And that's kind of the way I look at that bet every year. Like, what's the likelihood that it's actually one less than the total, or I guess 1.5 less than the total than over it? To me, I cannot see a scenario that Malik Willis and Kenny Pickett don't go in round one. But then it gets a little bit tough there. Like, I think Desmond Ridder has a real strong chance to be QB3. I do think that that could happen. Where does he land at that point? I don't see Sam Howell getting into round one. Matt Corral's round one momentum has completely fallen off a cliff as well in the last month or so, as some more warts in his game have become clear. It's possible he gets in there at QB3, but you start to wonder about landing spot now. And once you really get past Pittsburgh, when you get that like 18 New Orleans and 20 at Pittsburgh, once you kind of get past there, I don't really see a landing spot for some of these guys. I don't really see a team that's going to be that eager to trade back into round one for them either. So it becomes difficult to kind of find landing spots for some of these players. You have Carolina, you have Atlanta, you have New Orleans, you have Pittsburgh, but I don't think all four of those teams are taking a quarterback. So is there a surprise quarterback going somewhere? I don't know. Like, teams like Atlanta, they need everything. They need an edge rusher. They need to fix their wide receiver core that's completely barren right now. Like, Auden Tate's wide receiver one in Atlanta. Like, they have to fix that going forward. You know, Pittsburgh, I know they're interested in Malik Willis, but I don't think he gets to 20. Do they trade up? And if Willis isn't there, do they go, okay, we're going to roll with Mitch for a couple years and see what, you know, maybe next year's draft looks like. Maybe CJ Stroud or somebody like that. So I can't see a fourth quarterback going in round one, but I will never, ever say never when it comes to that position.
Let me ask you this, Jamie. I know we want to get to Sauce Gardner, but because everyone agrees that it's all right, the Panthers are the first team that need quarterback. Even though that's not kind of true, because Jared Goff is not going to be the quarterback for the Lions forever, and Davis Mills isn't going to be the quarterback for the Texans forever. Is this a product, though, of those teams are so terrible, they just can't draft quarterback? Or is it more so they're eyeing up Stroud and Young for next year and valuing the chance to draft them over this year's class? Is a combination of everything?
I think it's a little bit of both. You combine those two with kind of the comments that they've made. The Lions at two are interesting because there was that little stretch there a couple weeks ago where the Malik Willis at two momentum really picked up. And look, they coached him at the Senior Bowl. They really liked him. They said a lot of good things about him. But the fact that Aiden Hutchinson now might be available at two changes that equation a little bit when you're trying to work out the percentages in your head. Because I cannot foresee a scenario where they pass on Aiden Hutchinson. Like, I just, if he's there at two, cannot see them passing on it. So you have to kind of factor that in as well. You know, Detroit, if they didn't have the Rams pick, I think we'd be talking a lot more about quarterback there. But do they feel strong enough about their QB1 versus their QB3 or 4? You know, and do they feel like they could sit and wait at 32? Do they not like this class at all? Which is a factor. Like, the Lions aren't a year or two away from competing. Like, that's the reality of the situation. They can draft anybody this year, and they're not going to be competitive next season. So do they wait for another QB class? Because we've kind of gone full circle here, where we started at the beginning of the year talking about how lackluster this QB class was in general. Then people kind of started to try to talk it up a little bit. And then we got through the All-Star games and everyone was like, yeah, this is as kind of mediocre as we thought it was all along. That doesn't mean teams won't reach. They do it every year. But I'm with you. Detroit used to need long-term quarterbacks, but I just don't feel like they feel like they're going to take them this year in the top three. But I think Detroit is more likely to pull the trigger there than I think Houston is.
We take a look here, Jamie, at the draft. And obviously, you know, cornerback is a big position because it is a passing league now. And obviously, stopping these big wide receivers and quarterbacks is the pathway to victory. Sauce Gardner coming out of Cincinnati. We looked at the FanDuel Sportsbook today. His over-under in draft position, Jamie, 8.5 at a plus 140 to go over, under 8.5 at a minus 188. Your thoughts on Sauce Gardner, where he might go? And also, do you think there's value in taking him over or under in his draft position?
This is an interesting one because I actually have a ticket on the over right now. I'm not feeling great about it, but I do look at this. And I know there was some conversation yesterday and some reports that kind of got leaked out that the Jets and Giants are looking at Sauce Gardner. And while I think the Jets like him. I just don't think the Jets are going to take him at 4. I think they take him at 10. I don't think they take him at 4. The Giants, if they end up moving on from Bradbury, which feels like it's been inevitable at this point, I could see them making a move there at 7. But to me, I look at this and I go, there's no other quarterback that's going one at this point. The Derek Stingley Jr. conversation, he has fallen off. You know, Trent McDuffie, some of these other guys are not going to go over Sauce Gardner. But to me, I look at that 9, 10, 12 spot as I kind of like that sweet spot where it's Seattle, it's the Jets on their second pick, Minnesota. I'm not sure. Like, if the Jets take him at 4, they could. He'd be a great fit for them. I just don't know. I think that's a little rich for me. And then between the quarterbacks that are needed elsewhere, the wide receivers and edges that are needed in Atlanta, I feel like they're not going to prioritize taking CB1 in the top 8. But there are landing spots for him. But at plus 140 right now, I have that ticket in FanDuel right now that I put a few bucks on there. I think that one might be a good plus odds value for those that are looking for something.
Yeah, and it's, of course, very interesting because the two New York teams, while they have needs, they are looking to make trades. That's Jamie Eisner from the Draft Network. Jamie, thanks so much for joining us here on the show. We'll be sure to keep in touch with you throughout the build up to the draft season. Coming up against the break, though, right here on the Early Line, as Listen Up, we'll close out your Tuesday edition on Sports Grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, guys, last segment of the day here for the Early Line on SiriusXM Channel 159, the Sports Grid Network. Both myself, Donnie Wrightside, and Kevin Walsh, as usual, 7 to 9 a.m., setting the table before we hand it over to Ben Stevens and the morning after. Major League Baseball yesterday, we saw added a job from the DH. Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit of Major League Baseball today. So you people, come on now, listen up. The Universal DH is already creating jobs in Major League Baseball. Isn't this what we wanted? Or are you going to tell me that you'd rather see a pitcher be at the plate in the National League? Case in point yesterday, Albert Pujols. Yes, Albert Pujols. Welcome back to the St. Louis Cardinals to be a DH. Is he going to play every day? Absolutely not. Should he play every day? Absolutely not. But against left-handed pitchers, Albert Pujols can still be effective. Signed for about $2.5 million. And oh yeah, Albert Pujols has 679 career home runs, on the path to possibly topping 700 home runs. This move is impossible a year ago, 3 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago in the National League. Why? Because they have to have the pitcher bat, and Albert Pujols can't take the field anymore. And you're not going to sign him just to be a pinch hitter to play here and there each and every week getting three at-bats. You want him in the lineup for multiple at-bats against left-handed pitching. So the DH moving to the National League is wonderful. Just like everything else that Major League Baseball approved this offseason, designed for you, the viewer, the better, and the fan, to have a better experience, because teams are going to be able to score runs, not have a pitcher bat here, ground into a double play, or do his old, I'm going to bunt these runners into scoring position. More offense, more money, better for the players, and yes, better for you as the fan. Now, also, what's good for you as the fan? Staying tuned next up here for Ben Stevens in the morning after, which I do believe Kevin Walsh is also going to join for the first hour. We got it going on here in Sports Grid, and we're only a week and a half away from Major League Baseball opening day. Have a good day, people.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.